Hello and welcome to You Really Shouldn't Have. My guest on this episode is model and filmmaker Wendy Stewart. Wendy joined me from her home in New York to discuss her career and unwrap the story on the worst gift she's ever been given. So Wendy, thanks so much for being on the show today. It's really great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I mean, we're so close and yet so far away, right?
Absolutely.
I'm in New York. We're in the UK.
Now, I know you grew up in New York, and I know your mother was a model herself. So I imagine modeling was something that you were interested in from a very early age.
Well, what's so funny about that, people always say to me, how did you get interested? I remember being a small child, and you know how you have fantasies? So here I am. I'm in the Bronx, you know, very middle class, working class neighborhood. And I had this glamorous mother. And I remember her sitting in front of her makeup mirror, lining her lips and filling them in with red lipstick and talking about, you know, her days of modeling in New York before she married my father. And by the way, she was very happy to be living in the Bronx and not modeling, okay? But I really latched on to all of these stories about her. And it was really quite amazing because I can't, you don't realize when you affect a kid that way, right? I carried it through my entire life. As a child, I remember my mother wearing her mink doll to the supermarket. How many kids can say that? So she was, I would say, you know, back then they didn't say influencers, but she was my influencer.
I know you're known as a fits model, and I didn't know what that meant until I started doing some research for this interview. So for anyone listening that maybe is the same as me and didn't know what it meant, what exactly is a fit model?
Well, first of all, thank you for doing your research, because a lot of times I come on and people are like, okay, you're a fitness model. And everybody's thinking, she pumps iron. Why isn't she more built up? But that's not what a fit model is at all. She's not a fitness model. A fit model means a person that can fit into the average American size as a model. Or, for instance, in New York, it's a size 8. In the UK, I believe it would be 12.
Yeah, that's right.
I think R8 is right. Is that?
I think that's right. That sounds right to me.
It sounds right. So my job is to work with designers and take all those tiny, gorgeous garments that you see on the runways, right, during Fashion Week. And then the designer has to take and make that fit mass market, which is, you know, normal people, or as I like to say, I cover the asses of the masses. And I say that because I take a tiny garment that's on a 14-year-old girl on a runway, and I have to use my own body as the standard and make sure that that garment translates, right? That's the big one, James, the translation. So it gets into a larger size. What fabrics do we use? How low cut do we want to make the neck on it, right? Yeah. How much bra coverage do we want? And when she goes to move, people want to be able to move in their clothes. They don't want to be like sitting in a straitjacket. So there's a lot of components that go into making a garment fit a regular person. And that's what my job is. And I work with a lot of the major manufacturers here in the United States to get those garments to fit people.
That process then, from garment to garment, how long does that take?
It is a process. I will meet with a designer. Then we make all the notes. We come up with measurements, right? Now, we start with a sketch. We help come up with measurements. Then it's often sent to China. Now we're really busting into other markets, too. It could be Italy, China, anywhere in the world. And they will have a pattern from us, and they will have to make what we call a first sample. All right? So that's about, in a perfect world, that's 2 weeks by the time you get done shipping. And I mean, these days, I don't have to tell you, everything's all crazy. So then it comes back and we get what's called the first sample. And I have to take and make comments on that, what they need, you know, to fix on it. Oh, the armhole is really cutting me. You need to lower it like half an inch. I make those comments with the designer, and then it goes back. And the factory will usually do one more sample. And we're hoping at that point to be able to okay it. Because, you know, it's all about time, right?
Sure.
Clothing has to be, after we okay it, then they make it, and then they do their mass shipping. So you've got to have things really ready to go, especially when what we have nowadays, we have what we call fast fashion, right? H&M, you guys have H&M. We have H&M here, Zara. That's all fast fashion. So you have a really quick turnaround time with that stuff. So you know what? You've got it. You have to have it rocking and rolling within 3 weeks to a month, if not sooner some of the time.
What are the major changes you've seen throughout the years of doing the fit modeling?
Well, let's talk about now. Like somebody said to me, so New York shut down March 12th. And someone I was talking to the other day said, so how's the modeling going? If I could have jumped through the phone and smacked her, I would have. What a dumb question. But the modeling is going because here's what happened. We all had to adapt. So all of a sudden, I had clients say to me, Wendy, you know, what are we going to do? We need your comments. We need you to try the clothes on. So we shut down March 12th. By March 17th, I was having clothing shipped to my house. I set myself up on Zoom, right? Look what Zoom does. You and I are talking. You could be a designer. You could even be in the UK. It wouldn't matter. And I would have the garment on, right? And we would talk about it. And, you know, I have a little studio. It's in the corner of my couch in my TV room. But you know what? It works really well. And I do exactly what I would do if I were in a room with you. But now we've taken and made everything virtual, right? And that is how I have moved this whole fit procedure forward. When I'm done doing the fitting, you know, the people that come and get the packages, I call them up. I'm like, okay, I'm ready for a pickup. And they come and take the garments and then, you know, ship them to the designer or back to another location, wherever it needs to go. But it's, you know what? It's become quite efficient. And people are starting to realize here, and I think people will realize this all over the world, maybe we don't need these expensive showrooms and offices anymore.
I think you might be right. Have you been doing anything a bit different during the lockdown period at all?
Here's what I did. You're probably wondering, okay, I told you how I've made my modeling career survive, right? So 3 days into this shutdown, right, my husband's a cinematographer, and he and I make documentary films in remote parts of the world. That's another thing that we do. And I said to Alan, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? This is like everything's been blown up. And I've worked too long and too hard to sit back and say, there's nothing I can do. So I said to him, listen, you can shoot, and I'm an on-camera person. We'll come up with a show. And he said to me, what kind of show do you want to do? And I said, we'll do a cooking show. Now, this is what you need to know about me. I don't cook. I'm out at parties and clubs and networking all the time, okay? If you open up my oven, there were books in there. That was the only thing my oven was my library. I literally didn't cook. I would order in, you know, New York, you can get delivery all the time, as I'm sure where you are too. So I said to him, we'll do a cooking show. He said, that's crazy. You don't cook. I said, exactly. James, what could be more entertaining than having a show where the host doesn't cook? Yeah. It's a great idea. And, you know, people know me out there and they all know that I don't do that. So I came up with this show called Pandemic Cooking with Wendy.
Nice.
And you're probably right. It's pandemic. And you're probably thinking, well, what the heck did you do on that show? Well, it's a lot of comedy. I travel to different places and make food from that. I travel to different places because one of my characters is not a flight attendant, a stewardess on Pandemic Airlines.
Oh, nice, nice.
You're right. It's Pandemic Airlines. We never leave the ground, but you won't care anyway. It was such a great way to reach people. People are making the recipes, but you know what the bigger picture is? With so many people that got sick and they were home, they said to me, Wendy, you make me smile. You make me laugh. I look forward to you being on there. So I have my own YouTube channel. It's Wendy Stewart TV, and it's Pandemic Cooking with Wendy. And today, episode 52. Oh
my God! So what is the worst gift you've ever been given?
Oh my. Okay, so I'm just going to go for it. So when you have a show called Pandemic Cooking, people can give you weird things. And somebody I know that I will just say is a burlesque star here in New York. Well, his name's Bear Donna. He's a combination of being a burly bear and has wrapped it into a Madonna character. I can't even explain it, but it's brilliant. And his whole shtick is he does Disney parodies. He just picks the word. I know some really unbelievably creative people here. So He said to me, I'm sending you something for your, you know, that I want you to talk about on your show. It's a gift for you and you're going to be really excited when you get it. So I get this very heavy plastic covered in rhinestone with elastic on it. And I put it on my face. And I'm like, my gosh, this is supposed to be a mask. It did have holes in it. But I'm like, I would totally suffocate wearing this. But anyway, I put it on Pandemic Cooking with Wendy to show everyone that I thank Bear Donna. Oh, my God. I'm going to tell you this only to find out later. Yes, I had it on as a mask, but that's not what it was used for.
No.
For some, right, you got it. For somebody doing burlesque, I'm like, oh, my goodness. So there, I know you're laughing. I'm laughing, too. I'm like, that's, like, so incredible.
Now, Wendy, for the last decade, I know you've been involved in documentary filmmaking in Africa, and you've picked up a host of awards in the process. So how did the opportunity first present itself for you to go out there? And what are the experiences that you've gained along the way throughout your filming?
Oh, my gosh, we could talk another hour, and I won't do that to you. So let me try and put this in a nutshell. In my 20s, when I was in the university, I had the opportunity to go to Nigeria and live. And I studied Shango, the god of thunder, it's a deity that people strongly believe in there. And I saw Shango, the belief in Shango, cure people of things. And it fascinated me, right? This other culture. I stuck out like a sore thumb. I lived in a village called Ife. When I got there, the little children and the parents, they'd say, Oda bo oibo. And I'm like, oh, that means hello. And I thought Oibo meant foreign person. No, it means white skin on an orange.
Oh.
But that's right. And I was so different to them. People were amazing to me. And they just totally took me in. Now, you have to understand, I'm in this village. The Biafran War had just ended. They were overthrowing the government there. All this crazy stuff was going on. But yet I felt totally safe. And in many ways, I can't even explain. But Africa's my heart. And I have just, from the time I was a little kid, there were two things I knew. I knew I was going to be a model. I knew I was going to go to Africa. So fast forward, I come to New York. I'm modeling here. And Africa was always in the back of my mind. And we started making films in other places. And then we became members of the Explorers Club in New York. And when we became members, I was entree to a lot of the brilliant lecturers that we had there. There's only 3,400 people in the world that are members. And I had shown them my film. That film was called Fragile Beauty, about the tribal people in Ethiopia. The thing about them is, not only are they still living the way they did for hundreds of years, their dress, their head ornaments, they look like that 365 days out of the year. And it is just unbelievable. The intricate patterns. They came out with body painting long before we even had inking here. And I mean, they can give you a run for their money. And they look like that every day. And I went there thinking, I want to tell the story about that. But you know what? The smart documentary filmmaker realizes when you go to do one of these films, you have to be flexible because the story you want to tell will not be the story you often find.
Uh-huh.
And I'm there. You know, and we had gotten somebody to do translating for us. I work within their tribal system. And I also told through a translator, the chief, that we would pay the village $100 and any person that we photograph would get $20. That's a lot of money for them. And they don't use currency, really. They really trade cows and goats for the most part. But everyone all over the world understands currency. So we go there and we're doing that. And all of a sudden, my guide there says to me, Wendy, I need to talk to you. Do you have malaria medicine? I'm like, well, yeah, I do. I don't have any extra because you have to take malaria pills because of the mosquito situation. And he says to me that there's a little girl in the village. She's very sick. And can I help? And I'm like, how can I help? I can't give her my malaria. I said, well, what can we do? Well, there's a clinic, he tells me, like 3 miles from where we were, but the father can only pay with a cow. And I mean, this is happening right here in modern day where father can only pay with a cow and they won't take the cow at the clinic. I mean, can you imagine? And the child is dying.
Mm.
And this is a father like any father that wants the best for his child. So we were able to coerce the father to get into a Jeep with us. And we did have to coerce him with a little girl because we were foreigners. And he didn't know me. And I had to tell him that as a visitor, I wanted to make a gift to him. And my gift was going to be, I was going to get the malaria medicine. So now all of a sudden this film that I was making about, you know, how beautiful people are and how they dress, now we're down to the nitty gritty. Now we're down to the fact that kids die from malaria there still all the time. We get to the clinic and this whole thing about malaria medicine, you know what it costs? $10.
Wow, it's nothing, is it?
Right. A child is dying over $10. So that was our first film. That was Fragile Beauty. And then I became a member of the Explorers Club, heard two women speak there about primate rescue in Cameroon. Well, why are you rescuing the primates? Well, like what you have with elephants and rhinoceros, they're being poached. People said to me, what are they poaching gorillas and chimpanzees for? I said, two things. In Asia, they use it for medicine. And all over the world, believe it or not, there's a terminology called bushmeat. What's bushmeat? Bushmeat is they use like the parts of a gorilla or a chimp as a delicacy. And I was even told here in the United States, there are, you know, on the QT, you don't know about it, but that is happening here. And I met two women that are really waging a war against it. And one is from the UK, Rachel Hogan from Ape Action Africa, over 300 primates in her rescue center. And I thought, this is my story. Why does somebody do this? So that's what my film was about. It's called Whispers and Witnesses, Primate Rescue in Cameroon. And sure as I stand here, I've been 8 feet from a gorilla.
Wow.
They don't like me. It's the blonde hair. My husband is kind of like burly. And my daughter says he moves like a gorilla. He wears a black cap. And they just the minute they would see him, it was like a kindred spirit. Me, I had one of the gorillas, you know, when they pound their chest and they make that weird... That's scary. So you know what? They never accepted me, but we really made a wonderful film that won the best documentary at the Chelsea Film Festival. I'm very, very proud of it.
Now, you've got the book, She's the Last Model Standing. What was the process like of putting that book together? How did you find that?
So my processes are not like anything else. I had, at the time, someone who was a friend who was living with me, and she was the one that said, you have to write a book about your life. And I would sit and talk to her on my couch. And she, from that, just kind of made like a proposal, little chapters, a few paragraphs, and came up with some sample chapters. And then we made a proposal for it. And we sent that out, and it was systematically turned down. And she said, well, you know, you don't have a book, and I don't think there's anything more we can do. I'm not that kind of person, obviously.
You don't strike me as that kind of person.
Right. Of course I have a book. We just need to figure this out. She and I don't speak anymore, but I have an amazing friend who's an author, Patrick Sirachi. So I called him up and I said, I'm very frustrated. I really want to get a book out there. So he looks at it. He says, Wendy, I love this as a premise for the book. I'm going to turn you on to my agent. So she said to me, listen, she said, you don't have a book. She said, but you've had a fascinating life. I'm going to turn this into a book for you. She said, I'm going to get you an editor to work with. And I said, well, what exactly does that mean? She said, you're going to pay him a certain amount of money and he will work with you and turn this into a book. So what we did, his name is Davis Wallace, and his name is on my book. It says with David Wallace. What I would do, he was in Palm Springs. I would call him 9 o'clock in the morning, my time, 6 a.m. his time. And he would have all these questions prepared for me and literally draw out my story. And we were able to write the book. And of course, he and I would argue a lot too, because I would tell him exactly what happened and he would want to rephrase it. I can honestly tell you there were no rephrases in my book. And he said, you know, the grammar, I'm like, I don't care about grammar. That's how I speak. Anyone out there who's listening that wants to write a memoir, one of the most important things, your timeline, your structure, how are you going to make it make sense? Ironically enough, it was his idea to open up the book with me being in Africa. We didn't open up the book with me being a kid growing up in the Bronx. That's why you have a brilliant editor. I couldn't come up with that, you know? But yeah, these are all my stories in here. And it's She's the Last Model Standing. It's available on Amazon and available on Kindle.
So wrapping up, Wendy, if you could go right back to the beginning of your career and buy yourself a gift to help you get where you are now, what gift would you give yourself?
Oh, the gift I would give myself early on in the game was, I would say, hair pieces.
Nice.
I've always had, my hair is like me, it does its own thing. And having discovered hair pieces for real in the last couple of years, that would have helped me early on. Because you know what? The outfit was always together. The makeup was always together. And then this hair, I have hair that if it's raining out, boom, it flies in a million directions. I have hair that if it's cold out, it goes dead flat. So, you know, I try and have as much control over things in my life. My hair, I have never had control over. And the beauty of hair pieces, right? I always say to people, I love slapping on a wig because you can go out and it can be pouring rain and not one hair follicle moves on that fake hair.
Incredible. And finally, Wendy, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Okay, so I'm going to give you all my social media now. On Facebook, Wendy Stewart. Then Visual Journeys, Our Stories, is where you can read about my films. My book is under She's the Last Model Standing on Facebook. And then go to Instagram. I'm under She's the Last Model Standing on Instagram. On Twitter, She's the Last Model Standing. Standing is spelled on Twitter, S-T-A-N-G. Don't even ask me how that happened. There's just so much. And last but not least, I have two things. My website, www.wendystewarttv.com. And then, most importantly, I know you want to find out where pandemic cooking is. Go to my YouTube channel. My YouTube channel is Wendy Stewart TV, just like my website. And you'll see my 52 episodes. They're all nicely organized on there in a playlist. And I've got some of my theatrical work on there. And that's all she wrote.
Incredible. Wendy, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. It's been great to have you here. Thanks again for listening to this episode of You Really Shouldn't Have. Be sure to subscribe to us on your chosen podcast service to make sure you never miss another episode. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at Bad Gifts Pod, as well as online at badgiftspod.com.